You are listening to the What Shapes Us podcast. Yeah, what up, y'all? It's your man's Salema Mabena of the Masakellas. Excited for this throwback to throw forward episode of the conversational episodic known as a podcast. Marc Rabier. If you're unfamiliar with Marc Rabier, well, you spend too much time in the real world. You're not on the internet enough. If you're a person who's on the internet looking for productive ways to be inspired by things that border on nonsense, but also like fuel you with just enough humanity to be like, yeah, I want to go out and be recklessly alive, Marc Rabier is for you. I discovered him, I think, on the Instagram Discover page, maybe 2020, early in the pandemonium. I can't take credit for calling the pandemic the pandemonium. I got that from another podcast called The Read. Shout out to The Read. Whenever they talk about the pandemic, they use another P word. Sometimes they say the Pantene Pro-V, the pandemonium. And so I've been trying to find alternative P words, but I always end up going to theirs. So if y'all want to come after me for money, this podcast doesn't make any, but I'll give you what I have in my pocket. I think it's $22. But anyway, I came into a relationship with Marc Rabier early 2020. I think it was March or April. And I'm like, yo, who is this guy? This guy who essentially plays with a loop machine. He, first of all, just a brilliant musician with a loop machine who layers together and puts together improv songs in real time. Picks a subject in his mind and then expands on the subject into infinity in ways that touch all areas of life, from the nonsensical and absurd all the way to like, wow, that was a hidden gemstone of social commentary mixed with you dancing either in your underwear or in one of your many silken robes as you make brilliant beats and layer harmonies, and just generally like take the piss out of the stupidity of our society. Marc Rabier brings the frequency up. He brings the life frequency up. Sings incredible songs about sex.
Let me in, I'm trying to fuck. Let me in, I'm trying to fuck.
Love. It was over before it began. he's like a life coach in his songs.
Get the fuck out of bed, bitch, go.
And anyway, I became very much an addict, and he, I think, for myself and others who, you know, lockdown and COVID and the world changing overnight, that shit is mad depressing, has a way of making you feel different about your existence, as everyone knows through the various manners in which we've been touched by it. And here was this guy who the whole time was like, nah, gonna steal my joy. In fact, I'm going to turn my joy up 10,000 degrees. So he'd do like these Facebook lives and IG lives and and these edited pieces on Instagram, and I fell in love with the dude. And in 2020, Lollapalooza was doing a non-live Lollapalooza. I guess is how you would say it. Internet Palooza, Coviticus edition, and Mark was performing, and Red Bull was like, "Hey, do you want to interview some people for the stream? They'd like you to interview some people for the stream." And I was like, "They're like, any artists that you'd like to talk to?" And I was like, "I saw his name on this flyer. I saw Mark Rubier. I was like, that guy, Mark Rubier. He's amazing." And they were like, "Do you have his info?" I said, "No," but they said, "Well, we'll reach out to his people." Anyway, my folks at Red Bull reached out to his team and they weren't hearing anything back. And I was like, that can't be, because I'm in love with him. They should know that. And meanwhile, you know, this guy's got hundreds of thousands, millions of fans that he's amassing around the world because of his internet performances. And finally, I just said, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to shoot my shot on the internet. And so I sent Mark Rubier a DM, a direct message. And you know what? He hit me back and said, yes, I would love to talk to you, Salema Masekela. And I love this conversation because essentially this is kind of right as he's beginning to explode and so much is happening kind of overnight, and we talk about the manner in which he sort of used lockdown to build his brand and capitalize on the momentum of people being forced to pay attention. Erykah Badu comes up, which is a great story. I won't spoil it for you. And all just his background, like Mark, his story is rad because it's one of those stories where someone's got a passion that they can't deny, and then they got a job, right? Like they're working to survive, to live. And Mark makes a choice at a certain point where he's like, you know what? Fuck this. I got to see if this music that I can't live without, if I can do something with it. And he makes a rather unpopular decision these days. And instead of choosing security, he chooses himself. What he's experiencing or what he's created online in the last couple of years is a result of choosing himself, knowing that what he has to give is something that no one else has. And it was truly a blast of a conversation. And you'll see I'm fanboyed out the whole time, but like I just admire people who their passion is undeniable. They're not doing what they're doing to be famous. They're doing it because they literally have no choice. Like that's the only way they can live, is by being as holy and true to themselves as possible, no matter whether people like it or not. So please enjoy this What Shapes Us podcast conversation with Mark Rubier. Hello, everyone. Salema Mabena Masekela here with another What Shapes Us conversation for Lala 2020, this time with a mythical man that I thought only existed in the Nexus, but it turns out he is real, and we are going to talk to him, the one and only Mark Rubier.
Salema, how do you do, my friend?
The power of the direct message platform.
Yes. Dude, I don't know if I would have done half the shit I've done without it, honestly. It's incredible.
I've only come into the power of it, or the appreciation that, like, hey, these people that you admire or that you want to work with, they are just like you. And so maybe we cut out the middle people to find out if texturally, like, there's something there creatively, and then let the people who
do the business get in the way instead of the opposite, which I'm sure you find in music is like, it's radical.
It's insane. I mean, I think you can probably paint with that brush throughout the industry. Really. It's like record labels have become less important. You know, distribution arms have become less important. All sorts of like publicists and marketing and managers and all of that have become less important just because like access belongs to us now. There's no like gatekeeping anymore, which is pretty incredible.
And we're also just not busy with bullshit, like fake movie.
Right. That's true. That's true. We're busy with real bullshit.
Yeah. With far realer bullshit. And so like the haze of stuff that allows you to believe like, man, these people who listen, I'm not taking anything away from the people who work for us to make things come to fruition.
Right.
Sometimes you can lose the plot and be like, they think that they're actually doing like the planting, like of the seeds.
Yes.
And when in actuality, like they're there to harvest and help you harvest the thing.
That's a good metaphor. I like that. And yeah, I mean, obviously there's like many moving parts that are still very valuable and still do an enormous amount of good and help for, you know, creatives in general, but yeah, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of little tentacles that we're finding are not quite as important as we thought they were or at least they're not anymore. They're becoming a little less important, you know? I don't know.
They're becoming a little less important, and I think since we can all acknowledge that the past is most definitely the past and we're not going back to it.
Yeah.
And whatever we're in right now is pre-flight for a new future.
Right.
Those roles are going to adjust accordingly. But I think for me, it's been a reminder, and for a lot of other like deeply creative people, it's been a reminder that like, oh, I am actually like the CEO of my shit.
Yeah. That has taken me some serious like learning, because it's just not something that I've ever been exposed to before. I've always been working for someone in a job that I don't care particularly about. And so that just that whole concept at large has been a big learning experience, you know?
Well, you could have fooled the world. You could have fooled and have fooled the world. I read that you worked in a call center.
Oh yeah. More than one. Yeah.
What kind?
I did one that was mortgage loan servicing for for Bank of America, and it was like it was a part of Bank. Oh, really? You too?
I was a Bank of America customer service agent.
No way. I
worked in the call center.
Oh shit! Yeah, dude. Oh man. Okay. So my thing was like it was a servicer for Bank of America. You know, it was like a company that they hired to handle like the defaulted loans that happened after Katrina and all that, like all the countrywide, all the disaster loans that like Bank of America bought and then had to deal with somehow. And so it was an awful, awful job. It was like people who were hundreds of thousands of dollars in default, who were just like needed some sort of help, and we were expected to like side with the bank, and that it was extremely demoralizing. It was like a really difficult job to do and like go to sleep at night. So I did not last long. I've never lasted long in any job except for this one.
Same for me. I never worked until I got in television.
Yeah.
And found my gear in being able to work around my passions in sports.
Right.
I never had a job for more than a year. Like,
wow. Yeah, that was me too. Like, I think a year and a half is the longest I ever held a job.
And my friends would come home from college and like start real jobs and stuff, or maybe they had some family money and they had like start businesses and they're getting started with families and stuff. And they'd be like, oh, so you're still working two jobs and surfing all the time. That's cool. That's going to work out.
Dude, that was like for like well over a decade was my, the thing that I hated doing most was whenever anyone in any situation where you're meeting someone, if it's a date or new people, and they're like, what do? Then you have to launch into this whole fucking thing about, well, I do this, but I'm trying to do that. And it's this whole thing. Woo! I do not miss that. I do not miss that.
Well, I'm so proud of you. Like, I don't know you, but I have this immense pride for you.
Thank
because
you, man.
I discovered you, I think, as I like to say, you came into my purview.
Yes.
Around February.
Mm. And
the first time I saw a video, I was like, oh, this dude is switched in such a different on. Like, he must have been through some shit where he finally just decided, like, I have zero fucks to give as far as what I can and can't do. So I'm just going to go the fullest version of full send of what I am and see if it resonates.
It's pretty accurate. It's pretty accurate. I basically had reached this point where it was like, you know, I can get another one of these call center gigs or... like I can just try to get someone, you know, to hire me and whatever, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, if I can get someone to pay me to do this, then I will feel like it's worth something, like it has some sort of value because I'd never been paid to do any music of any kind before. So that was like the breaking point. And then once someone actually paid me to do it, I was like, oh my God, like this is a commodity, you know, or it could be. It has the potential to be a commodity. So that was a big thing.
You started playing music at a very young age, right? Like,
yeah.
Growing up in Dallas,
I spent part of my childhood in Dallas. Well, I spent sort of my like adolescence and young adulthood in Dallas. So I spent my early childhood in New Jersey in Inglewood, Bergen County. Yes.
Father Inglewood.
Inglewood. T-neck. Leonia, yeah. It's like not places you shout out.
T-neck?
Then a fly? Yeah. It's not shout outable places. But Englewood Cliffs. but yeah.
Englewood? Sorry, not that one. Sorry, not that one.
No, not that Englewood. Not the real Englewood. No, Englewood, New Jersey, you know? Is it? There's a lot of opticians over there. It's heavily wooded. It's a beautiful area.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, dude. Yes, I mean, playing piano since I was a little kid. My parents sort of forced piano lessons onto me. I just kept it up since then, really, you know, in one way or another.
What kind of music were they playing in your house, though? Because... it's like everything that was left over from everyone's meals in one pot. Like, oh, don't throw that out.
Yeah.
Put it in the pot.
Let's use this. Yeah.
We'll get a nice broth out of this. I promise.
Yes. You just got to let it cook long enough, you know?
Mm.
My mom, I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of Motown. My mom was big on Temptations, Four Tops, Smokey Robinson, Ray Charles, my dad loved James Brown, Aretha. I listened to a lot of Aretha. And then my dad also listened to a lot of classical, a lot of opera, a lot of Arabic music. He was really into that. But my mom is the one that sort of put a lot of that soul, I guess, into my palate at like a young age, you know, like a lot of that, just a lot of like, you know, Soul Brothers and all this sort of like, what is it? Sam and Dave.
Mm.
And just a bunch of shit like that. Like, you know, they had records but I would just listen to a lot of that. And then I became disconnected from it for a while when I entered my adolescence. You know, I got into like Nirvana and Blink-182 and Green Day and all that shit. And then I came back around. I think like I started listening to like Snoop and Dre, and they like pulled me deep into this like sample based. I mean, I guess they're not, yeah, they're sample based, but yeah, like then I moved into further into like deep sample based hip hop, which brought me back to soul and like, and then reinvigorated my love for soul. So it's always been sort of anchored in that, I suppose, yeah. You know.
A little like a funkadelic time machine back into the roots of who you were as a person. Like, oh, this is actually my shit.
Yes, exactly. Like, oh my God, this is good. And then, you know, I also had a girlfriend who's like one of my first serious girlfriends who introduced me. I had never listened to this stuff, but introduced me to a lot of like John Lee Hooker and Lightnin' Hopkins and Skip James and a lot of this like Delta Blues. And then like the Alan Lomax archives with like all of those beautiful old things that we would never have heard if he hadn't like gone around the country with a fucking reel to reel and recorded it, you know? And that stuff blew my mind. It like blew my fucking mind. Just extraordinary shit, you know?
So she came and basically was like, no, you actually need to scrape the bottom of the pot. Like
yes.
You have to go and eat this shit too.
Yes, exactly. I was like, what is this? What is this glorious shit?
Yeah,
so it's that. All of that made me, it put me on a different, you know, just a different road.
Stuck in my teeth and no amount of floss is going to get it out.
And it tastes good.
So good. So, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it makes sense then what you do. Mm. Because, you know, watching you create in real time, which I think one of the great things about your appeal is that everyone who listens or watches understands, like, this is full vulnerability. Like, it's, but you're not, you don't come from a place on high. It's very right here. And as much as there's comedy within all that soul of your music, there's also this beautiful, like, you're like a, I think of you as like a subconscious social commentarian.
Wow. That's
but from a, like, a music stand, well, hear me out.
Yeah.
You say the things that we all think about. and have dialogue within ourselves and maybe talk about with a handful of people occasionally, and you put that shit out there as normal and as like full normal, and we're also allowed to engage and celebrate and think about it, and we're going to do so in the funk of the sauce. And it's
you have a way with words, Sal. You really do, man.
Well, thank you, sir. It's radical. Like, it's simple, but it's also radical. And I think it's what causes everyone to be like, okay, I'm here for it. But I wonder, from when you first started, if you ever thought that it would resonate with people at such like a bone marrow level. Because once people are down for you, like, that's it. Like, they're flying, they're in the camp.
Dude, yeah, no, never. It's still evolving for sure. And, you know, who knows how long I will keep doing it in this format, but like it did not start out with that goal, with that. I mean, that's a lofty thing. I didn't think I was in any position to even like speak any amount of, I'm going to come over here. Would you mind if I switch? Is that all right?
Take us all around this new, this well curated.
Oh yeah. Hey, we got my little.
Hey, I saw that the other day and I was like, this motherfucker has to literally.
And then he Roland just sent me this little piano over here.
Oh, and so cool.
I'm like Liberace over here with the white piano. But yeah, I'm going to sit down where the light is more. There we go. There we go. I think the show started out really like very heavily inspired by Reggie Watts. You know, it was like, because I mean, he gave me the idea of, I mean, his performances gave me the idea of getting up on stage with no plan and playing a set for like 90 minutes. I mean, he just does that so beautifully. And seeing him do that really changed my perception of what a show could be, what a music show could be. But, you know, I wanted to do it with like more instruments and more like drums and key, you know, because I have my foundation is in keys. So I knew I could do something like that, but I didn't really know how. So anyway, long story short is once I finally got up on stage, it was much more, I was just trying to like survive up there. So it was like, I was doing a lot of really ridiculous things. Not that I don't do that now, I absolutely do. But just a lot of really vulgar, intense shit that there was none of the message-based stuff, none of the love-based stuff, none of the change-based stuff, none of that. Because it was like I was just trying to get people to like pay attention, you know? So the best way to do that is by being like really crude and loud, especially when you're playing in restaurants and bars. So that's really where it started. And then over time, you know, as I've grown more comfortable on stage, I have been able to introduce these things that I give a shit about and care about and that I want to now impart to people. Now that I know that there is a certain audience that's listening to me, it's like, let's talk about kindness and generosity and loving each other and all this stuff that I've, you know, always felt very, very strongly about. And I get a chance to say it now, which is kind of dope, to say it to, you know, more people than just myself.
That's really beautiful, man, that like you could be disruptive and be like, all right, I'm going to get the fuck out of your attention.
Yeah.
And now that I have your attention, I'm also going to give you the full reveal of like evolved me as well.
Yeah. Hopefully that's the hope.
Your songs, they hit, man. Like right before we came on the air here, I was telling you, like, One More Time, that shit made me, I listened to it, I'm not gonna lie to you, I listened to it when you put it up that morning 30 times.
Wow, that's awesome, dude.
You know that's a lie. There was just something in which it resonated. I was seeing this girl and we just like it started off really dope, and then for some reason she was just, it's not my time, I'm not feeling this right now, like, and I had to take my ego out of it.
Damn, because that was recent, that just happened.
Yeah, just recent. And I was like, did I do anything wrong? Could I get maybe like an exit interview out of this? And she's like, no, you showed up as much as you showed up better than any I could have possibly asked for. Like, I'm just not feeling this right now. And I can't lie to you. You deserve the whole thing. And I was like, I wish I'd done something shitty.
Right.
But I also like had to take my ego out of it. I was grateful for what we had.
Yeah.
But I found myself in that at that energy. And when I listened to the song,
That's very appropriate, the song.
I was like, oh, this is that. I posted it on my stories. I was like, if my love language could talk, this is what it would sound like.
Yeah.
And then that night, she DM'd me.
No way.
And said, I listened to this morning when you posted it, and wow, it hit me some type of way. And I was just like, what's happening? It was, so I don't know if it comes back full circle in any way, shape or form, I'll be like, Loop Daddy did this shit.
Listen, my pleasure, man. My pleasure. That's a beautiful thing.
That song could also be like 7 minutes long. Like you could.
I get that a lot. I get a lot of people saying extended, 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 but or like a lot of my shit, you know, because it's like I make it up and then I get tired of it and I move on. And so that's, this fall coming up, I'm working on some actual songs, you know, some, right. some produced, composed shit.
That's one that should make, like that one should be the template, like whatever, there should be like a one more time redo on the album. Cause that Ooh. Song, there's room for redo there.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know.
Maybe yeah. Just putting it out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. yeah.
I see the wheels turning and that makes me happy.
I'm thinking about it.
there are two people who through quarantine have been to me like the greatest examples of using this time to redefine and sort of expose the holes in the music business, the 360 business, etc. You, in the manner in which you just built massive audience during this time and stayed consistent, and then said like, you know what, I'm going to go on the road and I'm going to do I'm going to be the first person to go out and tour during this time, yeah. and I'm going to do it with drive-ins, and it's not going to be fake drive-ins. Like people are going to listen in their cars, and I'll be the mobile person. I remember when you announced it, on Twitter, I was just like, oh, this motherfucker just like cracked the code. And then seeing what you went and did on the road was like, it's amazing. Like, oh, this
Thanks,
is,
man.
People were starving for it. And I saw the bravery and you were like, I got to do this for the people. The other person who radically by herself has been doing the same thing concurrently.
Yeah.
In using her own black platform and not giving her money away for live shows, charging people $2 and then giving them the opportunity to tip in the middle of the show, having a flawless app, etc., building three rooms from which to perform and letting the audience choose whether they want to be in the space room or the bossa nova room or whatever, future room, right? And the merch, etc., etc., with it and building her own shit, is the queen, Erykah Badu.
The queen, may we all worship at her feet. Mwah!
Like, if there was a Badula church, I would go there.
I'd go every fucking Sunday, man.
And I'd be like, what's that? I need to tithe 50% of my earnings? Is that all? Because I could...
May I not give more?
Please, take 90%, please.
Dude, she is the ultimate, and she is the fucking ultimate. I cannot tell you
how, but did it happen?
Dude.
Because when I saw that shit, before I even heard anything, I just screamed. I was like,
You screamed? I flipped my fucking shit. Yeah, it was really incredible, dude. I'll tell you how it happened. So it was like on the very end of the drive-in tour. I was in Fort Worth, and I'm from Dallas, so I was staying in Dallas. And I got there the day before. I played two shows in Fort Worth, so I got there the day before the first show. And she reached out. I was sitting in my Airbnb, chilling with my mom, doing a little social distance catch up because she lives in Dallas. And she messaged me just out of the blue. And she just said the sweetest things. And I said, what? I was just like, you don't know the influence that you've had on me, on the sound, on my music, on everything, vocals, everything. And she was like, call me, gave me your number. I was like, Mama, listen, I'm going to go call Erykah Badu real quick. I went and called her. We had a dope little conversation. She was like, I see you. I see what you're doing. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And she was like, I want to come see the show. And if you'd have me, I'd love to be your background singer or something. And I was like, what am I going to say? She asks permission. Am I going to be like, no, You know, actually, I'd rather not. I was like, dude.
I'll see if I can get you in.
Yeah.
We are sold out. We are sold out, Eric.
We're sold out, so no promises. But, yeah. Dude, yeah. I mean, obviously, I was like, 1,000 times yes. What an insane honor. So, anyway, it happened that, like, she didn't end up getting to the venue until I was already on stage. So it was like, it was really down to the wire. But once I got on stage, I knew that she was going to come, but I didn't know when. And we had never met. So like her coming into that tent and starting to play with me is the first time we had locked eyes. So there was no sound check, no prep. I mean, she just got up and we had to figure out how to work together. And it was fucking I mean, it was nerve wracking. It was terrifying, but it was exhilarating because she makes you feel good. You know, she's just a beautiful human being. And she just came up and she was like, I want to fuck around with this shit. She like started like touching the buttons, playing the keys. I was like, let me help you. Let's figure it out. You want to do this? All right, let's do that. You want drums? Let's pull up some drum. And I don't know, man. Yeah. It's just like, you're seeing that chaos unfold in real time.
It was so beautiful. And to know that, like, that was your first interaction. Like, it wasn't some backstage shit. Like,
no,
that was it. Her coming on. I watched you in that piece, and I could see, like, more than once where you have to tell yourself, hold it together.
Yes.
Don't freak out. Yeah. Like, yes, it's happening, but you have a job to do. Don't fucking lose this. I saw it, like, 3 or 4 times where you're like, bring it back down.
100%. I just having to check, just having to breathe and like, all right, because it's already, there's a lot of adrenaline when you're playing a show. But then you add to that, I've never had anyone come on stage with me before, ever. Anyone, I mean, I have my audience members come up and shit, but I've never had a musical guest on my show ever. And
why not start with Erykah Badu?
No, dude, it was, oh man, it was really extraordinary.
Your eyes on the last song where she hits that fucking groove and like starts singing into your like
soul,
your cerebellum, and then you, the entirety of your soul. I see you, there's a certain point where you just go,
yes, that is so real. That's as real. That's like,
and you're like, I'm just, let me just do what I can to make it through this.
Yeah, dude. You are watching me experience one of the greatest moments of my life right there. Like, that's what that look is. I am in the midst of one of the greatest moments of my life. It was an amazing thing, man. I just feel so fucking lucky that anyone of her caliber gives a shit. You know, it's pretty amazing.
It's a testament though, man. Like, people come along every once in a while that are meant to connect up and cause movement. And you're that dude, man. You're here at a time where you're able to be a vessel and you're communicating to people in a way that, like, yeah, they were able to receive it before, but it was like, oh, that's really cool. But they didn't have, you know what I mean? They didn't have time to like really like sit with the fucking frequency.
Right.
And what this time has been for someone like you, it's like, it's the perfect landscape. You're musically, you're allowing people to fucking explore how to be their whole selves, man.
Mm. Wow. Thank you, man. That's really nice. I appreciate you saying that.
It's the truth.
I just, it's always, I have to sit and think about how bizarre it is that I'm sitting here talking to you about this right now. It's just very surreal, you know?
I had no doubt that if I ever got to talk to you, that this is what it would be. I was just like, yeah, that's 100% the person. I was like, this dude's, I know his energy. So like, that's why I sent you the direct message. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to send this dude a DM because I think he'll say yes. I have a feeling. And if he doesn't, there will be no judgment because obviously everyone and their mother wants a piece of him. But I'm like, I got to hit him up.
It worked, man. It worked. Again, I'm telling you, the DM DM life, dude. DM life is, it's real. It's a real
DM creative life is the real deal. Is there a reason, like, at some point where you were like, I'm not going to put my mic in a mic stand? Like, you have so much shit going on that I'm always like, the choice to be one-handing, but there's also, like, it's like a lightsaber thing with the microphone where I could see, like, yeah, no, I'll make it work.
Right. Yeah. It is. Well, I'll say this. It's a little bit of a choice. I mean, it is a choice, but it's also... I still don't quite know because I spent the first year that I was performing in smaller in bars and restaurants, I had a mic stand with me always. I enjoy it. I mean, there's a song that I made recently, fairly recently, called You Were There, where I use a mic stand because I do like a bridge in the middle of the song where I have to sing and play. And there's really no way to do that if I'm holding the mics. So I got the mic stand out for that. But I do think there is, I should probably have a mic stand. I should.
No.
Probably, but I'll tell you, the reason I don't, and it's not a, well, it's a good reason, but I could also still do this with a mic stand. But I'll tell you, the reason I don't have one is because there's a certain showmanship. There's a certain look, a certain visual to someone standing around like this. You know, there's an energy, a kinetic energy to that. That's the legacy of performers from, you know, all the way down. That holding a microphone like this is a thing. It signifies that you're at a show, that you're at a performance. And when you have something holding it for you, it's more subdued, it's more, maybe more elegant, but it's less exciting. But that being said, there's a huge advantage to having a mic stand. You can do other things and talk. But I suppose there is something kind of fun in watching me struggle through it, you know, trying to the figure chaos. It out.
I think the chaos... The controlled chaos is part of the magic, and that's where the buy-in is, because it's your show is watch what happens next, like in real time. It's like, okay, and there's something about the chaos, but this the surety of the sword, like he will conquer.
Yes, right? Yes,
he will conquer.
Yeah, that's true, and I get. I definitely get a number of comments talking about, you know, when he picks the microphone up, you know, something's going to happen. So there's a certain, it's a visual thing that is nice to have, but you know, I could just as easily take the microphone out of the mic stand. So I don't know.
The microwave goes off. Like the food is ready when you pick up the mic. It's like, oh, yes. Okay.
Yes, we've prepared the meal and now it's time to eat. Yeah. Yeah.
When you posted the Erykah Badu thing, obviously it was amazing. But then I love the gap of time between when you posted it and then she decided.
Dude, Erykah does whatever the fuck she wants.
So like from a marketing standpoint, be like, oh, that moment has you know, it's seen its max and we're great for it. And when you go back in the annals of the Loop Daddy, you'll be like, oh, he did this thing. And then she shows up like a month plus later and is like, let me show you what the goddess can do.
Yeah.
And like,
boom, a million views. Bang.
Full viral. The people, like the level of artists that were like, yo, I want to fuck with this dude, etc. Like what's that been like?
Well, you know, there's this lovely thing that sort of happened around the time when I shared it, because I shared it on, I mean, I shared it on all my platforms when I shared it. And then there were other people that shared clips that those clips then went viral as well. There's like a whole network of people outside of my network that found out about it. And then of course, when Erykah posted it, then it's like, you know, people like fucking Jill Scott and shit coming through, like crazy people and who may never be curious to find out more about me. But just the fact that those eyeballs are there is really dope, dude. I mean, yeah, it's every time something like that gets put out into the ether, there's one more cool person that maybe knows what I'm doing, or one more person that's making interesting shit that might be curious about it in the future. And it's this foundation building that, you know, just having someone as like kind and generous as she is in terms of like wanting to share me, is.
She saw you.
Yeah.
She saw you. And so something like her, like, for someone like her, if she sees you, like, that's an undeniable thing. Like, she was therefore compelled to do what she had to do.
Right.
Which is,
right.
I think all of us that have become fans, you know, like, okay, how can I got it. People need to know this, you know,
yeah.
It's always, it's the same reaction. Anytime I've ever shared your stuff, people are like, wait, what? And then they, you know, they do it. They do it. They do it.
It's still surprising to me, man. It's still surprising, you know, because like, when she approached me, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know a lot about her personally, obviously, because I didn't know her, but you know, I just didn't know if this was like, maybe it's something she does, maybe it's going to be like, it's a flash in the pan or whatever. And we talk, you know, every other day we catch up, and it's like, she's just, if she takes an interest in you, she is there. She's there. She cares.
She does not fuck with people like that, bro.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Like, that's just, she does not fuck with people like that. She's Erykah Badu. She's got planets to travel to and shit. Like, she doesn't fuck with people like that. That's why it was like, at the end, when she knights you.
God, dude.
When she knights you with the multi-dimensional universe halo,
I know,
knights you with that, you're defeated. I watched it. I got nothing.
It's like I really didn't even know how to continue the show. I still had another like 45 minutes to play. I didn't know what the fuck to do. I was like, what do we do? Yeah. What a thing.
What does it mean for you to be able to do this Lollapalooza set at this time, like for this virtual? I mean,
it's lovely. It's a lovely thing to do, to still be on the bill. You know, I've honestly have never really had a very deep connection with festivals, ever. But the first festival that I went to was one that I was booked for. That's my interest in festivals. It's like, I just never went to one for pleasure. I never part of that culture. And it's a very intense culture, the festival culture, which I've now discovered and been educated on a little bit. But I have learned to love it, because it's, I mean, the good ones, the, you know, there's just an enormous amount of work that goes into them. And they're these big fucking dramatic affairs with the staging and all of the production that goes into setting up that, like, the whole thing, everywhere you're walking around, there's shit stimulating you while you're tripping balls or whatever you're doing. And it's just great. It's really nice. And you also get to sort of bump shoulders with like really cool people backstage. You're really interesting artists backstage. So there's a lot to love about it. Obviously, none of that is present for digital Lollapalooza, which is fine. I am happy that they are making the effort to still do something. You know, for the people who are sad to miss it, which I know is a lot. I've heard it's a very popular festival. I've never been. Have you been?
I've been many times. It's
how is it?
It's really young, and it's full of like that 18, 19, 20 year old, like, we're at a festival.
Yeah.
Boom. Like 4 days of just
do this.
Of like, you know, 10 of your friends in the same hotel room,
yeah,
full setting, and then just all this great, because of Perry and the way he curates it, like it's the greatest sort of swath of everything cool available. Like, and he personally is like, yes, no, he's so
Oh, that's
Wait,
cool.
You guys meet each other.
Oh man. Yeah, I've never met him.
You will. I think you and Perry Farrell would get down.
He's the curator, he's like the director.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You guys would you
Yeah, there's a whole other, like, the whole other thing about festivals is this whole, like, organizational thing about it. Like, who, I mean, you know, like, Coachella is, like, Golden Voice, but then Golden Voice runs venues, and it's, like, there's this whole web of connections and ownership that I don't know shit about.
You will.
I'm sure, as I hopefully continue to do this. Let's hope that 2021 we can get sort of back on track with all of this. I hope. Let's get that vaccine going. Let's get this shit. Let's do this. But for now, you know, we got to do it a certain way. And I'm, thrilled to be on the lineup, dude. It's an amazing lineup. It's a crazy lineup.
It's pretty cool. When can we expect the mask anthem to drop?
Hopefully soon, man. You know, it's just, I got to do it on a whim. I got to figure out a good instrumental and then record.
Yeah, that was my question. Yeah. How does it come? Are you in the shower and you're like, oh shit, something's coming. Let me dry off, get moisturized, get in these drawers and maybe a light robe.
Yeah. Possibly.
Possibly. Let's not overdo the thing. Let's not confine it.
Yeah.
Much. And then you just start going. Do you feel something like, oh, I got to get to it?
Yeah. It's very much of the moment. Like recently I've been coming up with some ideas on this thing, you know, because it's been since I lived with my parents probably, 13, 14, 15 years ago that I have had access to a full set of keys. Yeah.
Right.
That's really been doing me a lot of good, just being able to be on there and just really go for an hour, 2 hours and just play and come up with chord progressions that way. But it's born out of something like that. I'll either think of like a melody in the shower but really most of the time I just get in front of the equipment. I turn it on and I start fiddling around and then some chord progression or something happens. I'm like, all right, that's the thing. And then basically I'll turn on the camera and I'll sort of like, you know, for the more composed ones, like One More Time, and those that really happen very efficiently, you know, I figure out the skeleton of the song and then I'm doing maybe four or five takes to ensure that it's happening, you know, that everything sounds just right in that take. But then, you know, on the live streams, there is no such planning at all. And in the live shows, there's no such planning at all. I try very hard to think about nothing and then get out and figure it out in front of you. But, you know, I think there is also something nice about the ones that are a little more polished. They're certainly not that polished. I mean, the whole songwriting process is, I've spent at most, you know, 90 minutes on a song, I think.
It's insane. I also make music on the side.
Oh, cool.
I make music.
Yeah.
My mom's always like, you don't do it on the side. You make music.
Yes.
My last name is Masekela, and backwards it's Alakazam. So that's what I.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Board under, but it takes me a long time to write. Like I need to be in the pressure cooker.
Right.
Like, so best for me is like 3 a.m. when the session is like has been going for a few hours, and then I find my zone and I can write. I can write fast, but I need pressure and weird mood, and like I need to be totally buried in the space, and then it'll come.
Ah, so, that's interesting, yeah.
I also have never just created the space to be like, hey, it's just there all waiting for you, which makes me think.
Oh, dude, it's the most liberating thing. I mean, just as a, you know, because I spent many, many years trying to produce traditionally, you know, and learning DAWs and learning the production process and plugins and filters and all that shit. And it's the thing that I hated the most about production is just how fucking long it takes. You know, it's just like, if you want to make shit from scratch, you know, right. If you have sample packs and loop packs and all that stuff, you can, you know, it's like Legos. You can put some shit together and sort of make it and piecemeal it and sort of cut this here and put that there. And that's a little easier. But if you're trying to compose something, I mean, it just takes a fucking long time. You know, yeah. It just takes a long time. The arrangement windows, making sure everything sounds right, going back and starting the metronome on the four count. And it's just like, dude, no, stop. I'm just trying to lay down drums, lay the keys down. So I don't know. It's brought me a lot of joy, but, you know, there's another side to that coin, which is that it is limiting. You know, I can only create within the parameters of that piece of hardware, of the looper. So I can't do big dynamic shifts in tempo or in chords. I can't, you know, just immediately switch or swell or do, you know, there's just a lot of elements to traditional production that are hard, much harder to do with this that I've tried and sort of learned to approximate some of them. I definitely am, I'm trying to write some shit too, you know?
Yeah. I think that's what makes it so accessible. And then what's great about it is that, like, you can just build from there. I mean, it's the perfect sort of appetizer or, like, first few courses of, like, okay, now here's what the rest of the meal can look like. Right. Which is why what's so interesting about the idea of, like, redos of some of these things where, like, I know what that is and, like, also this is what it can be.
Yes, yes. That's exactly the approach I'm taking with this writing process. Is like a lot of the ideas that I've come up with on my live streams or perhaps off camera, but they're like choruses and harmonies and big musical statements that I really like, but that there's no song really fleshed out around.
Mm.
So like you said, it's an excellent jumping off point. So I've got like, I mean, I have dozens and dozens and dozens of those. So,
well, we look forward to what that is and what your growth is, and the manner that you continue to share, man. And I would just say, I don't need to tell you this, you know this, but like, don't you, now that you have the audience, don't forget that you're leading the charge. They're going to follow where you go. I'm sure you must get so much like, do this, do that, do this, do that.
Yeah.
Take that with the grain, but like wherever you go, you're naturally inclined to go. It's just, it's going to be fun to watch and fun to ride with you. Like it's, and I'm so grateful for you, man, to have this conversation with me, man.
Oh dude. Thank you for just being a lovely, loose, energetic dude. That's so nice to just talk to you in a way that feels organic. And it just, we just had a little talk. It's really nice. You know, I'm used to a lot of conventional interviews that are like, you know, it's all of the questions that I've been asked a million times, which is fine. I understand that that you know, they're writing for publications and audiences that don't know about me and can learn about. But it's just really nice to just shoot the shit with someone like you who's a good energy, a nice person, just wants to chew the fat. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I have made my career out of wanting to have conversations and exchange with people. I detest interviews, so I try not
to
do them.
That's what interviews should be. I've always felt that way. I've always gravitated towards those kinds of interviewers. I myself am a big fan of just interviewing and talk in general, and that's the way to do it. It's a conversation, you know?
Yeah, conversation. And like I said, the Mask Anthem.
Yes.
There's going to be some, I feel like really big, like breathe. But there's going to be like breathe and there's room for droplets.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be cool, but don't be afraid. Let them fucking have it too. Like
we're going to build it. We're going to work it out.
Put it on.
Yes. Put that fucking thing on. The hell is wrong with you?
You are a gemstone human. Listen to me, sir.
Yes.
Thank you. We will keep in touch.
Dude, I cannot thank you enough for having me. Yes, please stay in touch. Anything, you know, whatever. You know I'm down for weird shit. If you ever hear of anything or you got anything going on, let me know.
Keep you in the loop. And if there's any way that I can ever be of service for you, sir, I'm not in charge of Los Angeles, but I do have the keys.
Yes. Hell yes. That could be very useful for me.
Yeah. To be continued. Thank you so much, man. Take care. Stay safe.
You too, my friend. Take it easy.
It takes a village to bring you the What Shapes Us podcast. Our incredible graphic design team at Parsons Branding. Music by the one and only Hugh Masekela and my band Alakazam. It is edited by Ernesto Hurtado and Will Broughton. Produced by yours truly, Salema Mabena Masekela, and directed by Ernesto Hurtado, aka Machete, and myself, Salema Masekela. The What Shapes Us podcast is a Rebel Talk Network production. I don't wanna watch you go.